So we have an opportunity to share with you kind of our story and our journey, what it was like growing up. A lot of you probably have heard at least bits and pieces, or some of you have heard bits and pieces. This is the first time we've ever really shared kind of collectively from start to finish. Very few of you will have kind of heard enough of the stories to put the whole narrative together. But it's pretty awesome to have taken the last couple of weeks to kind of talk through pieces that we obviously knew about each other and had shared, but really putting them together as one story. I think it's a tendency for us to look at individual instances and stages and eras of our life as different stories, but at the end of the day, it's all one narrative. It's all one journey. It's all one adventure. So we're going to start right at childhood, and we'll kind of bounce back and forth a little bit. Carolyn is going to go first, and we'll kind of let you in at the 30 years that has been our journey so far, and not as long as you think it might take.
Because I don't like talking. You know this. You know this. So I was born in Rochester, New York, born and raised, not the scary inner city Rochester, but the suburbs of Rochester. I'm the baby of three, the only girl. Some called me spoiled. I reject those opinions. But I went to school at a private Christian school, which I loved, K through 12th grade. I was there the whole time. I was homeschooled 2 years, but really loved attending there. I was saved when I was five. I'm going through really quickly. my family, we were devoted church members. We were there when the doors were open. I loved church. I really did, except for Sunday evenings. I was definitely that child that when it was like 2 hours before Sunday evening service, because my parents were also involved in choir, so that was every Sunday. I mean, it was crazy. So, yeah, I would always try to get out of it and say I wasn't feeling well. I didn't want to go because we went to choir practice, and my parents made us sit right there in the pew. And we listened, and it was wonderful. And I loved obeying my parents, but I was a little bit jealous that I couldn't be in the back playing with the other kids that were behind closed doors. But that was it. I would say that my parents were strict and very protective, and that's kind of that's kind of the thread, I guess. I wasn't allowed to go to the mall with friends, no movies, sleepovers, very limited. I was trying to think of other things. I wasn't bitter. I wasn't bitter that I couldn't do all these things because I knew that they were doing this. They were protective, overprotective, because that's just how much they loved me and that's how much they were investing in me, and they just didn't trust anybody else with their little baby girl. I'm going to be honest with you. It felt unfair. It did. I don't think that you would consider me a typical teenage girl because I did not like talking on the phone, and you know, I couldn't go shopping, so I didn't go shopping. But I hated talking on the phone.
She didn't cook at all.
I really didn't cook. That's true. Why would you say that? Everybody already knows it. Jeepers. This is me cooking. See. my teenage life, I would say, consisted of staying home, going to school, or playing sports. Mainly soccer. I loved soccer. My parents started me really early, so that's what I did. I played soccer. And I appreciate that my parents invested and sacrificed their time to drag me around to practices and tournaments and all the stuff. But that was my life, soccer. That was it. Who said that? Thanks, Stephanie. But that was, in a very little nutshell, that was it. I keep wanting to restate the fact that I loved my parents. I did love my parents. I love my parents. But I'm sharing this with you because I just want you to know this is my story. And I couldn't help but feel a little bit like they were costing me some opportunities for growth. They didn't allow me to join a Christian singing group and travel. I couldn't go away to college. They wanted me to stay home, basically until I got married. So it was a long lesson. It was a long lesson of submission for me, and I definitely cried a bunch in my efforts to obey and love my mom and dad. And, you know, now, of course, on hindsight, I see that it was all orchestrated by God, and I would have it no other way. But just in those moments, it was trying. And when I was 16, I was ready for something different. I was ready to do something on my own.
And that's where I came in. But, yeah, my childhood was similar in some ways. I grew up in a pretty solid Christian home. My parents, or my father was a pastor all growing up. I was a pastor's kid. Born and raised, sort of, not really. Born here, right in Granby, until I was two. So not a whole lot of memories from then. And from the time I was 2 to 8, we actually lived in Rome, New York, where my father was he worked for the Alliance Church, and he was in charge of church planting. And so many, many Sundays would find us on the road at ridiculous times of the morning because we'd need to get hours away by Sunday morning service. And so it was kind of exciting for me because there was a traveling opportunity attached to church, and even though sometimes it was exhausting, we got to go all over the state and kind of meet new people. And we were in, like I said, we're in Rome, New York. In that role, we lived on a parsonage. And the parsonage was right on the edge of Delta Lake Christian Camp. So it's on the back end of a very safe neighborhood. And my backyard was a Christian retreat center. So you talk about like a little kid's dream. It was a really awesome childhood. Everybody in the camp obviously knew who I was because of the association. And so I had a great deal of freedom to go down and wander through the camp. And it didn't matter if it was like family week or if it was some little old lady's knitting retreat. Man, I was there. I loved that place. My brothers and I like to occasionally ring the bell that they had in the middle of the night during family camp. It took them the third time they figured out it was us, and we got in trouble and we stopped. But we thought that was really funny at 7 and 9, 7 and 10, whatever we were. So really good childhood. I was 7 years old, just almost 8. We moved back to the area, and my parents and I had kind of been in Fulton. The rest of my childhood was here. In fact, I remember school was over, and we moved, and it was like my birthday was the next week, and I was very sad because moving away from all of my friends for my birthday, and they worked really hard. There was actually kids that we had known from Delta Lake Camp that were from Fulton, and so they invited them over, and we had a frog race and a caterpillar building competition out of spice drops, which was very nice, and you could eat it when you were done, which was the best part. But a little bit later in life, it got a little bit harder and a little bit harder to be at home. It was a Christian home, it was a solid home, but it was not a perfect home. We had foster kids all growing up, at least 3 to 4 foster children in the home at any given time. Sometimes there's as many as 6. And it was a very militant lifestyle, as it had to be. These kids were coming from extremely, extremely therapeutic foster homes. So just about the worst situations these kids could come out of, they were coming out of. And so it was a very tight ship. It was very militaristic, which my mom was very, very good at. But it's not what I needed at that age, you know, maybe a little bit more tenderness. So I found my life in the woods, and I spent most of my growing up under a rock or in a tree somewhere behind the house. I was supposed to bring in what Cliff so kindly referred to as my man purse growing up. I went to a lawn sale, and I found this little leather satchel that was a purse. And it had these big yellow flowers on it, which I cut out in the shape of a football to make it more manly. But it was a leather purse. But I would go out, and my summer garb, man, I had black sweatpants that were cut off just below the knee. And I wore those sandals, or the slippers that are moccasins that aren't moccasins at all. They're supposed to be slippers, but that's what I wanted to wear. And no shirt, cut off slippers in the woods with my leather bag. And I'd be gone for a long time. They really encouraged me to be adventurous, which was really awesome. Like, looking back at the things that they did really, really well, I wasn't taught to be afraid of a whole lot, and I would have to be in the woods a long time before they actually started to worry. It's possible that they also forgot about me, but choosing to believe that they just trusted my primitive abilities. So I found myself, you know, I was in the woods a lot. As I got older, the woods kind of became work. I actually, for a long time, worked at the Fulton YMCA before high school. So I got there at 4:30 in the morning and would open, and it was my job to clean all of the preschool rooms. And then I would shower at the YMCA, go to high school, and then from high school, I would drive to Horse Farm, which I would work, you know, 2 or 3 hours mucking stalls and doing stuff like that. So really good work ethic. Didn't do wonders for my grades, but it kept me away from home, and I was able to pass everything, which was what was the most important at that stage. But I look back, and Philippians 4:13, I loved that verse. Growing up, just that I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. But as I look back at the way that I viewed that, I looked at that as very, childish. And I was childish because it had everything to do with what I wanted to do and that God would give me strength to live my adventure and to be in charge of my own destiny. And obviously, we know that's not what it's saying at all. But even in my yearbook, the senior quotes, I still have my yearbook, it's cool. That was my senior quote, was I can do all things through He that strengthens me. And I look back now, and to look at it through my 16, 17-year-old lens, I didn't have a clue. But I had taken that to mean something very different. And I'll share my new life verse later. But so senior high, it took me, I was ready to be gone. I moved out pretty much the second I graduated, was away to college in various apartments and stuff, and found this beautiful young lady, and that's where she's going to pick up.
Young is definitely the word, yeah, young. Yeah, we met when we were 16 and 17 on the Christmas of 2000, and yes, I'm going to say your names. It was because of Scott Hayes and Elizabeth Hayes that we met. We met on the legendary Divinity Hill while we were sledding. Dave's been a lifelong friend of Scott, and Elizabeth is my cousin, whom I love dearly. So we met on a very cold day sledding. My first impression of Dave?
Yeah, it's that bad.
I didn't really like him. I thought he was arrogant, actually. I don't know if any of you can agree with that. Just shh. Just keep it down. Just keep it down.
Just get past it.
Okay. So, yeah. That sledding was fun. Honestly, that's where it started and snowballed. We literally met. We were sledding. And then I will own the fact that for the first moment of my life, I was very bold and I left him my email address. And that's how it started. And then he immediately emailed me on when I got home, and it was a done deal from there. It was still long distance. I was Rochester. He was Fulton. We emailed back and forth forever. phone calls. I wanted to tell you this one story that when I don't know how old I was, 17, maybe a senior, I was at a softball game. I was about ready to play a softball game for my school. And Dave showed up out of nowhere. He's in college. I think you're at Morrisville. He showed up. He drove 2 hours in the rain on a motorcycle to be there.
To only make half of the game because I got horribly lost.
And that's when I knew he was the one. No, I knew before that. But we did know early on, you know, as I feel like a lot of people's stories are. You know. We were married October 18th, 2003. At the ages of 19 and 20. So we were pretty immature, but it was wonderful.
She was looking for an adventure, and I was an adventure. You might say I still can be at times. And it didn't stop there. You know, with the way that I kind of grew up, I was just constantly waiting for what was next too. And so when she came along, and I was pretty certain pretty quick that she was the one. I didn't tell her that because you don't do that. It's how you scare them away. But I just kind of had a feeling, and we were married very, very young. And just a few months after we got married, we decided that we wanted out of Fulton. We were living in an apartment on Hannibal Street in the Meadowbrook apartment. It's actually a pretty decent apartment. I called my brother and said we wanted to move to New England. Where should we go? He was living in Massachusetts. He'd been in New England for years and kind of knew, you know, what the spots were. And as many of our conversations, my brother and I are very, very short. We just connect. And I told him we're going to move to New England and asked him where. And he said, Rhode Island. I said, okay. Like, where? It's the Providence. He said, okay. And I hung up the phone and I put my 2 weeks' notice in the next day. And we were moving to Rhode Island after a couple of, like, 3-hour conversations that she had with her father, with him telling that we were crazy to do so, we went ahead and we did it anyway. We put everything into storage. We packed everything we could into our Pontiac GT, whatever. And we left with $600 in our pockets, which looking now, it's just so ill-advised. But we got out there and stayed with my brother for a couple of weeks until we found jobs and found apartments, and we moved into a horrible studio apartment for a lot of money in a horrible complex. By horrible, not dangerous or anything, just kind of gross. And we started. We just started our life out there. And just looking back, like it was an adventure. But that was like all about us. We were literally being selfish on purpose. I mean, we wanted to get our independence, and we wanted to have our adventure, and we wanted to do what we wanted to do. And we thought that we could just work harder and longer and have whatever we wanted. We learned that the hard way, that, you know, you can say that money and that stuff doesn't buy happiness, but it really buys, you know, horribleness. I just ran down, we made a list in the first 5 years of our marriage between the two of us, we had 18 jobs and moved 7 times. Now, the jobs, most of them, we each had 2, like at the same time. We were constantly trying to keep things afloat. We bought a car that we had no business buying. That was our little piece of the bubble where it doesn't matter what number you write down, they just believe you as far as how much you make. And on paper, you know, I could say that we could afford it, but we could not afford it. And we just kept working harder, and we just kept stuffing stuff in this adventure hole that we had. And it never got better. It just kept getting worse because it was fun, but it wasn't satisfying, and there was no fulfillment from it. It's like potato chips. It doesn't matter how many potato chips you eat. You can always eat more, and you're never going to feel full. Carbs, they kill you. But we're just never satisfied. So with all of those jobs and at times making really, really, you know, good money and driving a nice car and all that stuff and just be terribly, terribly unhappy the whole time. I look back now, and it's just not, that's not the adventure that we were created for. We weren't created to be the center of our own universe. There's a God-shaped hole. Whether you're saved or you're not saved, there's a God-shaped hole, and he's the only thing that's going to fill that. He's the only thing that's going to sustain and fulfill you. And so that was some hard years. I mean, it was awesome at the beginning. You know, we had lots of fun, and everything went exactly the way that we hoped and dreamed that it would go, and then all of a sudden it just didn't satisfy anymore.
Yeah, not for very long.
Not for very long at all.
Yeah. I have to tell you, my most crazy job was a paper route at 2:30 in the morning.
In a BMW.
Bad decisions. When we moved to Rhode Island, sorry, I had lots of dreams of doing those things that I wanted to do finally, being out of the house. Any of you teenagers, you need to come talk to me, okay? It's not all sunshine and roses. Being out on your own. I think this is when God started tugging at our hearts because unlike most or many mothers in this room, we found out we were pregnant like 5 months after we got married, and we had just moved to Rhode Island in our little studio apartment that we were both working full-time to afford and all of this. So unlike many of you, the news of a pregnancy was actually devastating to me. I was heartbroken. I remember sitting in my car and crying. It took me a couple days to get over it because I couldn't understand. I was like, what? This is a change of plans. We just moved away from family. And you know, just your family is that support system that you need with kids. And I was so young, I remember jumping for joy when I finally turned 20 and was pregnant instead of 19, because people look at you like, what? When we had our girls, I was working full time, and I remember, I feel like God taught us quickly that it wasn't worth it, that I was dragging my little baby girl to work and dropping her off in daycare, working all day, and then picking her up and not having any energy to spend with her and invest with her. I did my best. They turned out all right, but you know, it was really depressing. for me. And I immediately knew that, wow, I just want to get out of this as soon as possible. I want to get out of this debt. I want to stop worrying about it. I want it to stop eating me up. I want to be done with this. So I mean, we kept working hard. Kathleen was announced when Elena was one. We had we found out we were pregnant with Katie when Elena turned one. So then there were two little girls in the mix, and it was a long lesson, man. God just broke my heart every time I had to drop those precious girls off in daycare for the silly choices that we had made and the things that we thought we wanted, and now it's wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to stay home with my girls.
Yeah, and we couldn't. There was no light at the end of the tunnel. I remember rock bottom, you know, was just collection calls, and you finally sit down, and you're honest with yourself on paper for the first time, and you realize you're not making anywhere near enough to pay off even the stuff that you've made. I just remember being really, really, really making some really hard decisions, and I'll never forget the car ride. It's interesting that I couldn't remember the song, because forever I could remember the song, but I kind of remember that rock bottom moment when it just turned over, and I was like, this isn't even me, this isn't even us. Like, the things that we have come out here to chase, we know better. Like, we know whose story this is. We know who our lives are supposed to be all about. And the song came on, and it was, I cannot for the life of me remember the song, but I just remember breaking and just knowing that there was no light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, there was no human that math that could ever make this work. But that it was going to be okay, that even though I didn't know how, and even though I didn't know what our future would hold, but that it was going to be, that it was going to be okay. And, with that just became a huge burden to begin to want to go home and begin to want to be with family, and just a recognition that everything we had, that the troubles that we had and the stresses and the exhaustion and everything that we were going through at that time really had nothing to do with any of the finances. It had nothing to do with any of that. All the things that we blamed it on, what it really came down to is the fact that we had purposefully stepped away and said, this is going to be our life. This is going to be about us. And the moment we said, it's not, we wanted it to be in our humanness, and we made decisions to that end. It's not about us. And just recommitted it back to God, and we started making some really hard decisions. I remember driving with my father-in-law to give the car back. We talk about humiliation. That does not turn out how I thought it would turn out. Anyway, but just some really humbling, really hard stuff. But they were decisions that we made, downsizing into an apartment that we really didn't want, in a neighborhood we really didn't want to be in, but because it was, cheaper. And it still didn't make sense on paper, but we just kept doing what we could do, getting involved in church. We had attended church, a couple of different churches throughout our years there, but it always took the back seat when it was a nice day and we wanted to go to the beach because it was all about us. So just started really committing, getting involved in a church again, and then just started really crying out, pouring out, and just praying to go home. Like, we just really felt that whether or not we were supposed to ever leave in the first place, home is where God had us. And I was back to work on a job. Am I going ahead? No, I'm good. Okay. Just gotta keep in order. And I came back to work with my dad in an effort to keep digging out. He had a wall pad job, and I worked for the weekend. And while I was back, I found out that the daughter of one of my old youth pastors, who is now a lead pastor, his daughter was having a birthday party, and she is cousins to my nieces. It's not really family, but a close connection. So I went to the party anyway, and got talking to the pastor, and he was just sharing, I was sharing just my heart, what we were going through, a desire to move back. I had worked with the teens in my father's church for my junior and senior year. I acted as a youth director, so I was kind of in charge of the youth group, as kind of a student-led thing, and he had known me a lot of, my high school years, and he basically on the spot, he needed some more information, but basically on the spot wanted to know if I wanted to be a part-time youth pastor for them, which I thought was just the most ridiculous thing, that he could know, what we were doing and what we were going through and still see something in us. And so I came back, the next day, and we just started praying about it with a handful of phone calls, and he had some conversations. At the time, Carolyn was working at Bank of America out there, which was a pretty easy transfer. Her job, there was an opening in Utica, which wasn't perfect, but we were going to be in Phoenix, and so we made the move back. The church sent some trucks and some trailers, and we loaded all of our stuff, and we were back. What she made and what I was going to be making at the church was just enough to kind of get us home and get most of our bills paid, until we figured out something else. And so I was there. Unfortunately, it's not exactly where God had me. I praise Him every day that led me here. But it was a tough ministry experience for me. I came out of it after just 15 months, pretty beat up, both of us, pretty wounded, and we had left on pretty poor terms. And I remember coming out of it and just, we're not getting involved in church for a while. Like, we were going to spend a couple of months. My dad is a pastor in the community as well. It's like, I want to attend his church a few times. We're going to visit a bunch of churches. We're not getting involved. We're not getting involved. We're not getting involved. And God was just laughing the whole time, right at us. We came to a men's breakfast here, like the very first Saturday. It's one of the families that had been attending that church had ties here, and so they got me here. And I came to breakfast, and we came to church the next morning with the family, and then we came to church that evening, and then we kind of never left. We just ended up here, which was glorious, and I just remember the healing beginning immediately with Chuck and Philena's just huge heart. It's what they do. They love people, and it was just what we needed. And so we came for a few months and started volunteering the teens, and volunteering became being called here part time and then a little less part time, and that experience has just been an absolutely incredible one. Calvary has been such a huge part of our recovery, spiritual recovery, and just emotional, recovery. We came dragging through the doors that first time, and it's really just been pretty much better and better since then.
Yeah.
Her throat hurts.
I think I tend to compare my children in seasons. Like, the girls are both 19 months apart, and the boys are 19 months apart. And when we first came here, I was at the tail end of, we saw that I was going to be done working full time. It was coming. We had saved and saved and saved. We'd worked and worked. It was very close. And let me see. Got pregnant with Isaac, and it was a different feeling. I was actually happy. I was ready.
It wasn't planned.
Is it weird?
But she was happy.
I found it so strange. God had settled my heart and gave me peace. We love you people. It's been great here, and yeah, I look at the girls and the boys in stark contrast. I think, wow, in Rhode Island, I wasn't happy. I wasn't ready for kids. And now I've got the boys. I've got Isaac and Eric, and I felt prepared and at rest. And I chose to homeschool my girls, not because I'm a great teacher or have that gifting at all, but because I wanted to catch up on time that I knew that I had lost with them for those years that we worked crazily in Rhode Island. So that is why I homeschooled my girls. I did kindergarten and first grade, and I loved it. But sorry.
Yeah, having the boys was definitely just a totally different experience. Eric, we actually planned. So one out of four we were expecting. Which was nice. The rest were total surprises. But it was amazing to come, to feel like they were coming into a much more settled us, just people that were where we were supposed to be for the first time, really since we had gotten married. Very, very different situation. And then, 15 months ago or so, we started kind of a new season with you all. Chuck got sick. He got really, really sick, really, really fast. This time was extremely emotionally and just physically and psychologically hard for me. I just remember being so tired. It's just the responsibilities kind of fell on me, which I was here for and happy to do. But just the deep, like, in your bones kind of exhaustion that there was no shaking. I just remember in the middle of that and in dealing with just the emotional, spiritual side of that, just beginning to question again, like, is this is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Like, is this right anymore? Like, does this feel so bad? Or does it feel so heavy because I'm not where I'm supposed to be? And it was a season of just not so quiet desperation for me, of just really crying out and really clinging on to the truth that I believed in my head that this is what God had for us, but I didn't feel it in my heart, and I was crying out for relief. And interestingly enough, you know, right in that season, Cliff came, and early on, he got to know him a little bit, and I really, really needed to just have someone to pour into what was an extremely dry cup. And so when he offered to mentor me, I that was the answer of prayer. We began meeting, you know, occasionally, and for me, it just immediately was able to talk through some of that and to start getting poured into in a way that I hadn't in a really long season. And then that grew, you know, he went from just kind of a mentor, he went into the interim of the church, which was an exciting thing, and I got more of him, and just got poured into more, and the weights started falling off, and I just remember, not all at once, no big moment, but just gradually my excitement and my calling, not only to youth ministry, but to very specifically hear that thing that I had known but I hadn't felt, I began to feel again and began to get really, really excited about again. And to have them on staff now, you know, to have him come on now as lead pastor with such a resounding agreement has been miraculous for us. And we just find ourselves on another side of just another really incredible, incredible journey. Just to see God work through those low spots. And all it took was us realizing that it's not our adventure. All it took was us stepping into the fact that we were created to live an adventure for him. And the second that we're away from that, the second that we start being about ourselves, we get in our own way, we get in his way, and there is no fulfillment from that. My life verse, shortly after the boys were born, became Proverbs 28:1. And it's interesting to look at, you know, the Philippians, and I viewed that as it was all about me. And even though it kind of says the same thing, Proverbs 28:1, it's the wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. It is a picture that in our life, if we have Christ, there is nothing left to fear. There's nothing left to be afraid of because he has sealed us ultimately, and because he has us, and because we are in him, and because our story is his story. And as long as we lean on that, we can know that we will never be poured out, that he will always fill us back up, that he will always continue us on our journey, even if he has to carry us or drag us or throw us, he will get us there. So the last 15 months has just been an incredible journey for me and for Carolyn as well.
I remember hearing Cliff speak in the Stranger series about Moses and how he felt unqualified. The verse that I found was Exodus 6:30 that it says that Moses is questioning, saying, "I speak with faltering lips. Why would Pharaoh listen to me?" And that's pretty much how I feel. I struggle with feeling unqualified, and I can't do that. I'm not good enough to do that. Who's going to do that? I just can't do that. But it's been interesting. It's interesting to be honest with yourself. I think we all have, I feel like the word brokenness is thrown around a lot, but we all have it. We all have brokenness and scars, and I have severe scars. And we never really let others know the piercing depth of those scars. But this summer, I actually shared the depth of mine at TLC in Pennsylvania. We took a group of teens down there, and I was so pumped and ready for God to do great things in their lives. And he did, and he really did. But he did great things in my heart, kind of brutal things. But I, for the first time ever, I shared something with Dave that I never told anybody. Like those things that you just push way, 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 way deep down because they don't matter. They're not going to hold me back from anything. you know, God kind of probably sort of knows, but I don't think about it anymore, and it's not a big deal. And it's too painful to bring up. But for whatever reason, during that week, God was pushing me. He's like, and I was just, I had to get it out, and it took forever for me to get the words out because I was heartbroken and ashamed and embarrassed and ashamed some more thrown in there. But after I got it out, I felt relief. I felt relief because I shared some things that happened in my childhood that had really, that had affected my whole childhood and teenage years that I was just keeping way down. From then on, I gotta say, being honest is good. Being honest and knowing that He still loves me, and knowing that I didn't even have to say the words out loud, but God still loves me. And that God was just waiting for me to say it, and waiting for me to name it and identify it and be real about it, to move past it and to grow and heal. And from then I feel like my heart is like unthawing. Grace, His grace is covered and soaked into the holes that I have. And I'm thankful that I was able to expose it, because now the pieces of my heart will be redeemed, and now God is unleashing a passion for Him and a confidence in Him I've never known, because I can't even believe I'm sitting here talking to you up front. It's just been... it's been crazy. God is amazing, and if anything I could say and encourage you to do would be honest, and it's okay to be broken, because that's the only way it's gonna get better.
So many people here have been such a huge part of just our healing. Our closeness is unlike it's ever been. I feel like her confidence levels and the woman that she has become, she's not back to what she used to be. She's never been this person before. And Calvary has such a huge part in that. So I would definitely just say that a lot of times at church, you look at, you know, you look at Cliff and I as the ones that are the ministers and that you are all ministered to. But I want you to know that so many of you have ministered to us and have helped us heal, not just cope, not just skim over, but actually address things. And you've loved us through some hard things, and we love you guys so much. And we are so unbelievably excited about what's next, just to see people's hearts open and to see people grow and to commit to God and commit to this place in ways that they've never done before, in ways that they've never been comfortable before. There is something amazing happening here. And I don't know what's next, but I know it's going to be big. And we are just so excited, and we love you guys so much. I'm going to go ahead and close this in prayer. If the band can make their way up, that'd be great. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we thank you so much for this place. Lord, we thank you for the hearts that you have given each and every one of the people in this room, Lord, that you have just given us. You've given us brothers, and you've given us sisters. And you have given us people that will impact who we are for the rest of our lives, Lord. And they have done it through you, and we have accepted so much healing, and we have received so much healing through you. Lord, I just pray that you would give us openness and vulnerability to one another, Lord. Because if we are not honest with each other, if we're not honest with ourselves, we can never truly grow. If we don't recognize the fact that our heart is in pieces, it'll never be put back together again. Lord, we love you so much. And we welcome you into an adventure that is not only ours through you, but ours collectively. That each and every person in this room is now part of our adventure. That we will live for you daily, as long as we breathe. In Jesus' name, amen.